Hello, friends and folks, and welcome to another podcast from Scanlane Media. I'm Six Detmar.
And I'm Jennifer Uncle.
And we're here to do another one of our sort of like review-y, roundtable-y podcasts for a specific game, as we do every now and then. And in this case, we're doing Sekiro Shadows Die Twice by From Software. I didn't anticipate us getting into this, to be honest. When Sekiro was coming out, I didn't think I would end up picking it up. You were a little more curious than I was, but then I don't know. I changed my mind at the last minute and picked it up without telling you, and now here we are.
Yeah, you had it as a late reveal situation where you were just like, surprise, guess what I've been playing.
Yeah. So like, I don't know, I feel like it's a little formulaic, but I guess we should start off by talking about our history with, like, the From Software games, and I think specifically, like, the Souls-style games, right? Because, like, I played, you know, like, Armored Core 2 on the PS2. From Software doesn't feel like the same studio to me anymore.
Yeah, it's a weird situation, because technically they've been making games that are like Sekiro and Dark Souls for decades, just in very... They were in a much different form, like... You could see certain games like this on the PS1 and PS2, and they were considered cult games back then, but it really didn't get much attention until Demon's Souls was published by Atlas, which is around the time when I started paying attention, and around while I was in college, Dark Souls came out, and I was one of the people that immediately rushed to play that.
So I haven't played Dark Souls 3, but other than that, I've played all the other Souls games. What about you?
Yeah, I've played every single one except Demon's Souls to a certain degree. The thing is with me, I am terrible at these games, so I usually make it maybe 10 to 20% in, if that, before I basically give up or be like, okay, I'm going to put this on the back burner for now, and then I never get back around to it.
Yeah, I think the furthest I've gotten, I got about halfway through Dark Souls 1, and I just, I felt like, I don't know, it's sort of a weird thing where, so I got through Anor Londo, which is sort of the famous area, and I got through the Ornstein Smog, which is the famous boss fight at the end of that. And for me, that felt like such a climax that I checked out a few of the areas after that, and they just felt underwhelming in comparison. And I was like, I think I'm done with this game. I wasn't unhappy. It's just sort of like, no, that felt like the end to me. And it keeps going, but I don't know that I care anymore.
Yeah, when you talk to Dark Souls players, Anor Londo is usually the thing they talk about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought it was a really cool area. And going from that, like, back to like, okay, well, let's go to another cave. I was just sort of like, why?
For sure.
It felt like a regression. I don't know. Dark Souls 2, I played at launch, and I haven't tried it since, but at launch it drove me crazy. I remember a lot of experiences, because when Dark Souls 2 launched, it was really rough, and I remember a lot of experiences of, like, walking up behind someone and hitting, like, hitting the backstab, and, like, my character would swing their sword, and the sword would visibly hit them, but they wouldn't get hit as far as the effect, and they turn around and kill me in one shot. And, like, some just, like, hitbox weirdness and stuff at launch, some lack of polish, drove me away from that game. And then Bloodborne is the one of these games that I absolutely dislike the most.
Yeah, it's the one that I want to like the most, because it has the coolest or second coolest style out of all of them, but it's one of those situations where the way that they limit the number of the flask situation that you can carry based on you needing to grind enemies out is so disappointing.
Mm-hmm.
And unlike Sekiro, I would say that they try and push you towards a more offense-oriented approach to enemies without giving you many tools to actually handle things that way.
Yeah, no, I think definitely there's a clear line you can draw between Bloodborne to Sekiro as far as, like, From Software trying to make a more aggressive style of this game, But in Bloodborne, it feels like, as you say, they did that without giving you new tools. They just sort of like, no, just play the same. We're just taking tools away. Be more aggressive. And I didn't really like that feeling at all.
Yeah. And there's something to be said about the way that game has themes around sort of old one style horror, eldritch horror, without necessarily dipping into the uncomfortable Lovecraft stuff. Like, I feel like they thread that needle pretty well from everything I've seen from my own playthrough and from watching people play it on YouTube. But I just wish I was able to access that content more, which is, I guess, the through line in all my opinions of Souls games.
Well, okay, so given all of that, what made you pick up Sekiro?
The thing that made me pick up Sekiro is, A, the way that, as soon as I saw what they were doing in the videos, and I saw that you had a grappling hook, and you could sneak up behind people, and a little dot would appear over people to stealth kill them, my brain was like, oh, hey, this is Dark Souls Tenchu. That sounds awesome. And I guess the other thing that really sold me on the idea is the idea that I could respawn, in a sense, after I got killed once. And at least from the outset, that seemed like this game will be easier than the other ones. I'll have more crutches that I can rely on, and maybe I'll be able to get a bit further than I have in the past.
Yeah, I guess to me, part of the appeal, a lot of it for me was just, it was just like getting caught up in the discourse, right? Of just like, hey, I want to be part of the conversation. These games can be fun to talk about, and I really liked its aesthetic and style compared to other Souls games. But another part of it was like, I feel like I have had experiences with Souls games where I've picked the quote-unquote wrong build, right? Where I've picked I played Dark Souls 2 with like a dual-wielding build, or I started Bloodborne with the threaded cane. And hey, don't do either of those things. They're just the wrong build. You'll just have a hard time. And it's sort of like with Sekiro, it's like, well, that's not really a concept. You have a katana, and that's just everyone has the same katana. You know, you can't really put stat points into things so much. You can buy skills, but those are kind of nominal. And eventually you'll probably have them all. And it's just sort of like, it felt more like it was designed, I don't know, like one of the things about Souls games is because there are so many different ways you can spec, usually, not all of them, not like Bloodborne, that means that sometimes you, like, a boss is easier or harder for you based on your spec. Like when I played Dark Souls 2 with a magic build, the first boss was, like, pathetic. He didn't get to attack me. I just stood there and fired magic lasers at him and he died. Compared to the time that I tried him with swords, and it was way harder. And so it was like, okay, if they have one, like, loadout, if there's one playstyle, then I can expect a more uniform experience, and there won't be these, like, sort of, like sharp, like, inclines in difficulty and drops and, you know, random, you know, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. I absolutely agree with you there. Like, I know people value choice in games like this, but sometimes you have rubber bumpers that you can put up. I want the rubber bumpers for Souls games. Just give me something that I can't fuck up.
Mm-hmm. And it's kind of interesting to me because I feel like the realization, well, okay, the what I realized, I think, is Sekiro has made me realize that it's not the case that these bosses are all like, oh, you know, they're designed with like certain weaknesses or strengths based on different builds, and they're all like this like careful balance so that different bosses will be harder or whatever. I think they're just incredibly inconsistent at balancing and that sort of thing. Like, I think Sekiro made me draw the conclusion that part of the reason Souls games are hard is because they don't know how to make things, certain, some types of things, interesting otherwise.
Yeah, it's one of those situations where the placement of enemies within Sekiro at times feels completely unfair and over the top. Like, there's a moment right after you defeat the Chained Ogre, which for me was a massive achievement, because a boss like that in other From Software games would probably be the point where I'm like, okay, I'm going to go to another place, and when I can't advance further in that other place, I'll probably stop playing entirely. But I made my way through that ogre, and immediately on the other side of that ogre was another mini-boss. And that was just such a deflating feeling. Like, I worked so hard to get to this point, and it's immediately brushing me aside and being like, oh, okay, here's the next challenge. Have fun.
Yeah, and I know they've talked about wanting this feeling of, like, overcoming, you know, like, impossible odds, sort of that feeling of success, and I don't think that's without merit, but I feel like the pacing and the consistency isn't there. I feel like it's not an evenly designed experience, you know? Like, when I got past the snake sequence, I didn't feel like I'd overcome this incredible thing. I was just like, God, thank God I'll never have to do that shit again. That was just obnoxious.
Yeah, apparently the way that I got through it, someone told me after I did it on stream that I wasn't supposed to actually survive the way that I did. Like, the snake swooped in on me at one point, and somehow I had cheated its animation priority and made it through unscathed. Mm-hmm. And even if it was playing fairly, I would still have that same conclusion that you would, where I'm like, okay, I have a shortcut here. I never have to think about the snake again. Thank God.
Yeah. It wasn't like, I don't know. I you know, there are fights that I've had in this game. Like, Madama Butterfly is a fight that I thought was really cool. And I really enjoyed doing it. It's not like this game doesn't have its moments. Or even, like, there are some sequences that, like, I may think badly of overall. Like, the drunk guy by the gate in the manor. Finding him was kind of a chore, but there are parts of it that were really cool. I mean, these games are scattered with cool ideas. I just feel like, yeah, I don't know. I feel like if they were, like, part of everyone's pushing for, well, not everyone, lots of people are pushing for these games to get an easy mode, and I feel like if they actually got one, like, the secret is we would realize they aren't that well designed.
Well, for me, it's a situation where sometimes, at least in the case of Dark Souls 1, I'm in it less for the combat and more for the atmosphere and exploring a place, because the way that Dark Souls 1 especially is designed, the way that it all feeds into each other, the way that you unlock shortcuts that have cool animations and everything feels incredibly seamless, that's something that I relish exploring. So if there was an option to explore a bunch of spaces like that without having to worry about the combat as much, I would probably be pretty happy, even if the designs were, as you said, not as exciting as they could be.
Well, but I mean, if you think about it, some of the stuff, I mean, at least for my part, some of the stuff I thought was really cool in Dark Souls was partially reinforced by how hard it was to get there, right? Like, there's that area in, there's an area where there's, like, a hidden wall, and behind it there's, like, this lady who's, like, a spider lady or whatever. And it's, like, a lot of the thing about what made that so cool was just this, like, okay, you had to grind your way through this area, and you had to, like, fight your way, and you had to find this invisible wall and go through, or not this invisible, this, like, hidden wall. And the payoff was partly because of how obnoxious it was to get there, and you had this moment of catharsis, and it's, like, I feel like some of the rewards of this game, if you weren't struggling as hard for them, just don't. I mean, and this is I guess, an argument for and against, right? I think, on the one hand, it is cool the way these games use the feeling of overcoming impossible odds or seemingly impossible odds is really cool, but I think it uses them as a band-aid to cover up areas where otherwise I don't think they're very well built.
I see what you mean, for sure. This actually has me thinking about a team that might be doing this more successfully than From Software is, at least in terms of giving a sense of accomplishment. I know that you've been having a lot of fun with Devil May Cry 5, and they had a GDC talk where they talked about how their goal was to give players a feeling of building up and empowerment and achieving something amazing, but they also built in systems that allowed some margin for error or moments where you can kind of sort of get it, and that effectively maintaining the feeling of accomplishment without kicking people while they're down.
Yeah, and I mean, there's also just the case, I mean, like, Devil May Cry, you know, has multiple difficulties, and that's, you know, that's as may be, but even if Devil May Cry just had, like, if you were forced to play on Son of Sparta difficulty, the game still teaches you how to play. Like, I don't know how far I was into the game when I realized that the Makiri counter, which is a move, an upgrade that you learn, where they're like, hey, if someone stabs at you, you can, like, step on the blade, and I realized that worked on people kicking me? And I was like, why? That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. That counter works for all sorts of things, like people, like physical attacks that honestly probably shouldn't work. And the other thing is, the way that you learned that initially is going over to this undead swordsman who more or less trains you every time you unlock a new ability. And his timing is completely different than every other character's timing. Like, they could have at least used another enemy's timing in order to teach you. Like, being like, okay, here's how this one monster that you fight will fight, and I'll show you their timing. But instead, it's this completely different thing. So, at least an hour or two into the game, I was still flubbing my Makiri counters because I had the timing completely off.
And then once you learn it with, like, a certain type of enemy, you just get it every time. Like, after a certain point, if I saw someone with a spear, they were just basically automatically dead. And it's like, I just didn't, and it didn't, you know, it felt kind of satisfying in a way, but it also sort of felt like, it just felt like guess and check, right? Like, oh, okay, I guessed until I figured out the timing, because it didn't feel like there were that many clues. And now I have it, and these are just a solved enemy.
And occasionally that could be okay for character action games. Like, there are some character action games where that's totally a thing, but in order for that to work better, as you mentioned before, they would probably need to balance their enemy layout a bit more than they have.
I mean, like, there's nothing, like, the mechanics for fighting multiple enemies at once in this game are so bad, to be honest. They're such a mess, because it's, like, the way, like, it's so heavily balanced on parries, but, like, multiple enemies will attack at the same time, and it's like a fucking roll of the dice when you hit parry as two people are swinging at you, what's gonna happen? Sometimes you'll parry one, sometimes you'll parry the other, sometimes you'll parry neither, sometimes you'll block both, sometimes you'll parry one and then get hit in the parry animation. It just, I don't, like, their system isn't built for the encounters that they've designed, and it feels very silly to me.
The all-at-once attack also feels like it's tonally or thematically inconsistent with what they're emulating. Like, I feel like part of the appeal of something like Sekiro is feeling like a movie-style samurai. And the thing with all those various action films is enemies tend to take turns when they're at least swinging at you, so I feel like changing the combat so it would be a situation where you A, have to focus on whoever's about to hit you at that time, and B, that's all you have to focus on for that split second. That would be that might be really difficult to do. I'm not a game designer, but
I mean, there are plenty of other games that, I mean, Devil May Cry does that. That's Bayonetta does that. That's a staple of character action games, is the idea of taking turns. And it's something that, like, it's noticeable when games don't do it. The Souls games don't do it. The Ninja Gaiden games don't do it. And that's one of the big objections I have. I know we have friends who don't object to that about them, but I think it's really obnoxious that, like, you will get in situations in Ninja Gaiden where there are four enemies around you, and they're just all attacking one by one by one by one, and you literally just have to hold block for, like, a minute or two, because there is literally no opening for you to do anything.
And it feels like the way that these encounters are designed in From Games encourages cheesing the system, which throws the whole difficult on purpose and throws a wrench into that, because I was watching someone's video and they were showing how you can survive enfeeblement and still fight enemies in that state, and the streamer's solution was walk behind a wall, wait for the enemy to attack you while they're trying to hit you behind a wall, peek out from under the wall, and use the little time that you have for your upswing to kill them in one go.
Yeah, I you know, I don't hold it against anyone for, like, cheesing these games, but, like, I also don't feel like it's good for that to be built into the games, you know? It's like, I feel like that's a coping mechanism for areas where the design doesn't get the job done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's one of those situations where without those being present in the way that they're designed as is, I think even fewer people would be finishing these games.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know, we've had a lot of ragging on, like, the combat design and, like, the difficulty balancing, but, like, what do you think of, you know, this is, like, they've done Western fantasy for a while with the Souls games, but now, and we're finally getting into some, like, some proper Japanese fantasy, how do you feel about, like, the story and the setting of Sekiro?
I think it's really fascinating, like, the way that they handle it is probably the most appealing thing about the game. Like, from the very beginning, you're playing this, I forget the term, Ronin?
You're just a shinobi.
Okay, you're playing a shinobi named Wolf, and your very first moment with another character as a child is them simply resting their blade on your cheek and it leaving a gigantic gash, and they really sell the idea that the sword is that sharp throughout the rest of the game. Like, there's this sensation that as Wolf, this person with a slightly messed up face and a dragon blood curse that's keeping you alive, that your sword really is that lethal. And the death blows especially are, they're my favorite addition to From Software's games. I feel like that might make it my favorite of these From Software games, because it's just so satisfying to creep up behind someone, hit death blow, and see unique animation with your character stabbing them with a gigantic geyser of blood coming out.
And it also mechanically is more interesting as far as, like, I mean, it rewards you for getting a good start to a fight, but also it makes it more interesting than just there being a life bar. I mean, like, you can just whittle down someone's life bar. That's still an option, but you still have to do the death blow to finish them off. And also, you can beat people by just sort of, like, pummeling them into submission, right? Where you can, like, for weaker enemies, you can just attack, and eventually just the sheer, like, repeated force of your blows overwhelms their guard, and you can do a death blow. And it feels a lot more organic. It feels more like how, like, you know, often in video games, fights feel like people with big swords just taking, you know, chunks out of each other over and over, and it flows a lot better than that.
Mm-hmm. There isn't really a stamina bar here. Instead, there's a stance bar, where the goal is to more or less kick them off their stance so you can instantly get the one-hit shinobi kill with your sword. And it's really interesting to completely drop stamina like that. I feel like they, through the things that they remove, they do a good job of telegraphing exactly how they want you to play it, which is really smart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they did definitely a good job on that front.
And I was initially kind of bothered by the fact that there's no character creator in this, and instead you're playing a prefab person. You can't play as a girl or anything like that in this one, but I feel like Wolf's a pretty interesting character in terms of, they make you sit through, instead of it being a situation where, okay, you're waking up in this prison and you're just being told, oh yeah, you're this rotten thing that got found in here. You more or less get to relive his various failures, including the big moment that kicks off your ability to respawn, where you're protecting your lord, which is a smaller child, and you straight up get your arm cut off and you get run through. And you wake up with this bone-like structure, this bone-like prosthetic. And there's this nice sense that all of the markings around Wolf, like from the what looks like his face, half of his face is rotting off along with his hair, to the limb that he lost, you really get the sense that you're following him around through his successes and failures. And I feel like that's a very, that's a very smart thing to do. That's a very smart evolution from previous From games. It makes it very distinct.
And I feel like, I mean, so people always like lauded the, like the, you know, lore building through like item descriptions and stuff. And there's still some of that here in Sekiro, but it's matched with characters actually saying what they mean and like a clear narrative and character motivations. And I feel like the combination's really good. Like, you know, it was neat to have those, like, you know, pick up a sword and, like, oh, this is, like, this is the sword of the kingdom of such and such, and all their, you know, all their knights used this before they all perished in a terrible fire, whatever. And that stuff's all well and good, but, I don't know, like, I felt like sometimes you had to dig so hard to get anything of substance out of Dark Souls, and I guess I can appreciate that concept, but in reality I found it kind of obnoxious to go through areas and not know why they existed.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Sekiro, I feel like, does a much better job of, I mean, like, one of the things they do is, like, there's the memories that you can go into, and they do an interesting thing where, like, so the first one you get is the Harada Estate, which is sort of a memory of a time that, your mentor was killed, and your lord was under attack, and their estate was burning, and it's a memory, like, it's a thing that Wolf still remembers happening, but Wolf wasn't present for. And so you go into the memory, and it's like you are going through the memory and taking action, and it's not the stuff that Wolf did at the actual time of those events. And so it exists in this sort of weird place where it's like, it's unclear if this is just like, if he's changing history, or if he's sort of like getting perspective on events, or what exactly is going on, but it's sort of interestingly mysterious while building out the world in a way that is more clear than Souls games have been.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to spoil anything big, especially since I'm not far enough to see if there's anything really big, but there is a moment in that Harada's estate area where you could run across a specific person, and if you kill that person, he doesn't exist in the present. Like, he won't be around to sell you items if you kill him in that world.
Oh, huh.
Yeah. I
didn't realize that.
Yeah, it's the guy that's looting the house, and he's like, oh, hey, friend, let me have this house, and you can go on your way.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I totally stabbed that dude.
Huh. Yeah, okay. That means that other person, I mean, that he never showed up for you in the present, which is pretty neat.
I guess so, huh. Yeah, because he didn't show up, I never even thought about it. I was just sort of like, hey, you're looting my lord's estate. You're gonna get got.
The NPCs in general are a nice change of pace for me, too. Like, I feel like it's a stereotype for most Souls games where you'll encounter NPCs and they're either very dour or they're just constantly going, and you're basically told that you can't trust anyone, and of the people that you can trust, they'll either be gone soon or they're just going to be glum all the time. While the people around you do chastise you every once in a while for basically being a failure of shinobi, they're also genuinely interested in you, and they are willing to help you out. And occasionally it's for their own purposes, and they'll admit as much themselves, but there's this greater sense that these are their own people with their own lives, and they're not just placed here to add more hostility to the world.
But you know what is there just to add more hostility to the world? Is Dragonrot.
Oh, Dragonrot.
Dragonrot's a really dumb system.
Yeah. If you have a game where your whole thing is you're expected to die a bunch because it has a mid-battle resurrection system, and in general it's I'd say mechanically it's one of the harder games of this sort. It's really silly to then punish people for dying and for dying too often or resurrecting too often.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so basically for anyone who doesn't know, the way Dragonrot works is there is like the math behind the scenes is intentionally obscured. I'm sure someone will do like the research and figure out exactly what the algorithm is, but when you die, sort of like there is an increasing chance that you will obtain dragon rot, which is basically a disease that afflicts NPCs and prevents you from advancing their storylines. And yeah, it builds up when you die, resurrecting or just like accepting your death. It seems to happen either way. And there are ways to cure it later in the game, but they are also limited. Whereas, you know, the way to get dragon rot is unlimited. You can get as much dragon rot as you want or don't want. And it just feels like it's a really, like, I don't understand what it's supposed to achieve. I appreciate the lore building, like the world building idea of, like, your resurrections are costing other people, right? That the energy is being drawn from the world. It's not just coming from nowhere. That's an interesting concept. But in practice, what it does is it punishes people who are having a hard time with the game and trying to learn by not letting them see as much of the game. And the game's already mean enough. And also, especially when you die and it's not, it doesn't feel like it's your fault, which happens a lot in these games because they're pretty unfair. It just feels really petty and stupid.
Mm-hmm. There are situations, there are still enemies and situations built in, kind of like mimic chests, that you're not supposed to survive your first encounter with them. Like, they're specifically designed to catch you off your guard, like the Headless or things like that. And having a situation where they punish you for advancing and for trying new things, essentially. Like, if you want to try a new combat style that might not initially work for you and gets you killed, you get punished for that. It's really silly, especially since there are other ways they could communicate that the dragon rot is affecting other people without locking them out entirely, or being like, okay, there's less of a chance that you'll recover everything after you die.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like this is another just sort of part and parcel of, like, this game. Like, I like the resurrection system in general. I don't like the dragon rot part of it, but I like the fact that you get chances to resurrect, you can take another stab at the boss. But, like, you've got the idea of, like, unblockables, which, like, some of them you have to jump, some of them you have to, like, dodge out of the way of. And they're indicated by symbols that you basically can't read because they look identical. And so there's a lot of, like, there's a lot of stuff where you just have to try and experiment and get killed to see how something works. Like, again, like Makiri counters. Makiri counters working, like, there. I fought the drunk guy, and I learned that you could Makiri counter when he tried to punch you. And it's like, okay, this is absolutely not something you've ever told me before, and probably won't be true the next time someone tries to punch me, but for this guy, with a very specific timing, I can Makiri counter when he tries to punch me. The only way to learn that is by experimenting and getting killed. It just feels really counterintuitive. Like, I understand, like, temporary setbacks for getting killed. Souls games have always had that. But putting, like, a lasting scar on your game for doing what the game is designed to do just feels really boneheaded to me.
Mm-hmm. It feels like once they got rid of weapon durability, because you just have the weapon, someone was like, oh, we have to have some sort of punishment. But I think dying and getting sent back to the last shrine that you visited is punishment enough, especially since everyone gets resurrected. And sure, you already lose half of your accrued experience and half the money that you earned, so it's just one too many setbacks for trying to play the game.
And also, clearing out all the enemies so that I could fight the Shinobi Hunter again is perhaps the worst punishment I've received in 2019. I don't need extra layers. That room is so fucking annoying.
Is that the one with the guy with the spear, or is it after that part?
Yeah, the guy in white with the spear.
Yeah.
And, like three guys with bows really far away from each other. Yeah, that room's very annoying.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, got through it. Yeah, I don't know. I the weird thing to say after all this is my second favorite Souls game. But to me, that just says more about how increasingly impatient I've gotten with From Software. Like, when they were promoting this game, they were like, hey, this is not a Souls game. We're not going to make a Souls game. That's not true. I mean, like, I guess they can say that. That's fair. But, like, I think at the most generous, that's an incredibly misleading statement.
Mm-hmm. You pray at shrines to restore your health and your flask. That also respawns all the enemies. There's a bunch of gotchas falling off the... Well, I guess falling off the legend, this one doesn't instantly kill you, but it's still one of those situations where your place within the world is very fragile. And It's pretty much a Souls game top to bottom. Like, there are differences, like no weapon durability, no stamina, and things like that, but it's more or less following that formula.
Yeah. And so, I mean, like, I don't know, I want to see them actually make a new not Souls game. But I don't know if I can trust them to do that anymore, because apparently they don't know what is and isn't a Souls game anymore. You know?
Yeah, they're a developer with a pretty long history, so I imagine there's things that they'll put out, like, I know Armored Core is a big thing for them, and I feel like there's other things that they could potentially make, but anytime they mention making another character action game, I'll just assume that even if they say it's not like this, it will probably be like this.
Yeah.
And on some level, I can't blame them too much, because it's the most successful thing that they've ever had, and it's the thing that people like, and it seems to keep working for them, and they still managed to surprise, which is really impressive. Like, did you get to the boss that they showed in that Waypoint clip that they tweeted out today?
I didn't see that clip, so I don't... I mean, you can... spoilers. You can spoil me if it's going to spoil something, so...
Okay, so there's this boss that's like a white ape sort of character, and...
Oh, yeah.
After you death blow it twice and everything like that, you think, oh, it's done, but suddenly it picks up its own head with one of its hands and starts charging at you again, and, oh, I guess there's a third stage to this boss. And
yeah,
that seems like such a really cool moment, and it's impressive that they can continue to add in little gotchas there. I just wish that there wasn't it didn't feel like there was a slap to the face at the end of each gotcha, like, oh, we tricked you, by the way, we're going to give you more dragon rot.
Yeah, more than anything, like, I don't I'm sure some of the things I've said will make it sound like I think this game is, like, badly designed, and I don't know if I think that's true. I think it's kind of cluelessly designed, if that makes sense. I think it's a game where, like, they don't know how to question their assumptions anymore, it feels like.
Mm-hmm. They have just enough polish where it doesn't seem too janky or anything like that, but the way that they design some of the enemy encounters definitely feels like something that you'd expect from a less experienced developer sometimes.
Yeah, for all their talent, they're using difficulty as a crutch.
Mm-hmm. And that's a shame, because the worlds themselves tend to be incredibly interesting every time they take a stab at it. Like, there's the reason that so many of those Bloodborne and Dark Souls characters are loved isn't because of the way that the combat is, it's just because they're very charismatic, and they say silly or fun or charming things.
Yeah. So, I don't know, on the whole, Are you encouraged? Do you feel like this is like a step forward for the series, or do you feel like you're more discouraged than encouraged about Souls style games?
I feel like it's a mix. Like, playing this reminded me why I ever gave these games a shot in the first place, because they're just so fascinating to play, and they feel good to play when you're not running against these walls. Like, the grappling mechanic in this feels incredible, and the way that they use that to string together some pretty interesting platforming sections where you're running across treetops that are hanging just below massive chasms. It's really cool. And the way that you can, when the character situations allow it, you can zip back and forth, and it's almost sort of Batman, except instead of having a button that instantly gets you somewhere, you have to put in a little bit more effort to pull off something that looks cool. And yeah, I like all that stuff about it, but I really thought that this was going to be the game that I could see to the end, and given the walls that I've run into, I feel now more than ever that I'll never be able to complete games like this, and that's kind of a bummer. That made me a little depressed when I got to a certain point in this game, and it just seemed like I couldn't make any headway.
Yeah, it has way more of a false front on this one, where like it starts out being the easiest of these games ever played, and then they just turn on the screws so hard. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, like Chained Ogre is probably the first time when things get real bad, and from there it's like tumbling into a cave and not really knowing how to fight your way out. And mm-hmm. That really bums me out.
Yeah. All right, well, I guess that's our thoughts on Sekiro Shadows Die Twice. I don't know, I feel like I still like the game, even though I'm really conflicted on it. I don't know, there's still an appeal to it, even though it upsets me.
Yeah, From games are weird like that. Like, even when you're angry with them, they're fun to poke at.
Yeah. Do we want to announce the next game that we do in one of these four?
Yeah, might as well.
So, next game we're going to be doing, we're going to do another one of these podcasts. They aren't scheduled, so as far as timing, I guess we'll see. But we are going to be playing Friends of Ringo Ishikawa, an existential school-time beat-em-up, basically. It seems really neat so far. I'm impressed. So.
Yeah, it has the visuals of River City Ransom with something that's more akin to Shenmue's daily life system built in.
Mm-hmm. So we'll get back to you on that, but until next time, we'll kick it to the plug zone real quick. Our Patreon is patreon.com/scanlinemedia. You can chip in there for $1 a month. You'll get access to Oops All Anime, which is our weekly anime coverage show, often with exciting guests. If you find me on Twitter, I'm at SixDetmar, SixDetmar. Jen?
And I'm at JBU3 on Twitter. And I also just want to mention that coverage of this game was made possible by our Patreon backers. So we support y'all. We thank you for your support.
Well, we support y'all and y'all support us. It's a great relationship. And thank you for everything.
Indeed.
Until next time. Peace.
Later.